do with considerations leading or not leading to a climate action policy. And I guess I would just like to start by cautioning everybody a little bit. This is not a political convention. This is not the British Parliament. We don't really allow hissing, cheering, clapping, all those kinds of things. So if you have a reaction to what other people are saying, please keep it at a sub-audible level, even if they're totally wrong and totally mixed up. Or in fact, especially if they're totally wrong and mixed up. So we'll get through our meeting tonight in a much better way if we all try to remain happy and civil, or at least civil, to each other, because we're all, you know, just residents of Bend here. We're not part of any worldwide conspiracies, as far as I know. And I also know that this topic is an important one to a lot of people and an emotional one to a lot of people, but nevertheless, we have to try to keep it at a nice, civil tone as we go through the meeting, which will begin with some presentations and then open it up for anybody who wishes to come and speak to us. So is there an introduction?
Just a quick recap of the agenda, which we have on the screen, in case you don't have a copy in front of you. We'll start off, as the mayor said, with some recap of how we got to where we are today. Then we do have OSU Cascades here to present some information on the greenhouse gas inventory that was recently completed. And we have time allotted for organizational feedback from both the environmental and business communities, as well as other external public agencies. Then move on to the public comment section, and we'll have a few minutes for each speaker, and we'll pause, I think, then, and then really wrap up with some summary points and next steps from council. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jillian Ochner, our senior policy analyst, to provide some background about how we got here, and also talk a little bit about what the city is currently doing as a foundation.
Thank you, Eric, and I wanted to just start by reminding us of the journey we've been on for the last year or so. Some of you in the room may have been the ones who came and began to address City Council over a year ago with your concerns around climate change and what the City of Bend's role should be, asking the Council to respond to that need. And at that point, members of our council reacted by asking the environmental community to come with a proposal of what should be the direction the city should take. The environmental community coalesced into a climate ordinance working group, I believe was the name, that convened over the course of many months. And came up with proposed policy language that was presented to the City Council at a work session on May 18th. At that time, the city staff, myself, also included some information about the work the city was already engaged in pursuit of energy efficiency and climate protection. At the May 18th work session, Council formed a subgroup that included Casey Rose, Doug Knight, and Barb Campbell. Nathan Boddy was an alternate to make sure we always had three council members to work together on responding to the request by the environmental community to come up with a policy. They met with our staff, Eric King, and our city attorney, Mary Winters, and myself to come up with a response, also incorporating comments that we had begun receiving from our community and responding to the discussion that was held on May 18th, which primarily directed that group to create a policy that included aspirational goals, a process for meeting those goals, and a steering group that engaged the community in that process. A new draft resolution was announced at City Council on June 15th, and comments were requested from the community at that time, and this special session was scheduled to give the community an opportunity to weigh in on this policy-making process. So that's where we've been over the past several months. I also wanted to give you just a little reminder of the things that the city engages in on an ongoing basis around this issue. We have a variety of programs in place, such as the Strategic Energy Management Program and our Commute Options Total Demand Management Program that help the city focus on energy efficiency and reducing vehicle miles traveled. We have a variety of projects. For example, the solar project on top of our parking garage is a good example of incorporating renewable energy and energy efficiency. We do a variety of assessments year-round to help inform our decision-making. One example of this is engaging OSU Cascades in conducting a greenhouse gas emission inventory for the city's operations, and you'll hear a little bit more about that one tonight. And then finally, and probably most encompassing, are the planning work, the planning activities that we engage in. Most importantly lately has been on our UGB process, where land use and transportation planning come together, and we focus on land use strategies that help us respond to the statewide goals for VMT reduction, vehicle miles traveled reduction, as well as greenhouse gas emission reduction goals that are also set by the state. And we have included in that, of course, parking management and transportation demand management, transit planning, roadway improvement management and policies, and complete streets and connectivity investment that help us look for the creation of a community that is in support of some of the goals that have been stated through this process.
So, and just to build off of that, behind me are the council goals. And every 2 years, when there is a new council that takes office, we work over a period of months to develop really a work plan for the organization. There's some specific goals that speak to what Jillian mentioned as what the city's already doing, including improving, really a focus on urban form. As we grow, we are growing in a much different way. We are transitioning from a more sort of suburban style to a more urban style of a city, and that means the concept of complete neighborhoods, mixed-use communities, this idea of less dependence on the automobile. This is all part of our planning efforts that are embedded into this urban growth boundary remand, which it's not just about the boundary of where the city is going to grow, it's also about what is the city going to look like over the next 20 years and beyond. And so that vision, that policy framework, is what the city has been focused on through the last couple of years. We're very close to having that come before the public in a public hearing in August and taking it off to the state for approval. There's also a goal around natural resources and stewardship of natural resources and specific projects, including participation in the Bend Energy Challenge and some other work around Tumalo Creek and water stewardship. So that process that occurs every 2 years, and what's included in the draft resolution for the community is really uses that framework. What's committed to in that resolution as currently before the community is to include issues related to climate action through that goal setting, and then resources needed to complete that work through the budget development process. So we set goals, we then use those goals to then inform the next 2 year budget process, which begins July 1st, 2017. So that's the, I think, the work before council and the community is to help us best inform what that goal setting is going to look like and the resources needed to achieve those goals in context with other competing needs and for resources in the city. So, and just to put a little more emphasis on the urban growth boundary work, the remand project will go for approval, then there's a lot of follow-up work to make sure that that happens through commitment of staffing resources to do the more detailed planning and code work to realize that vision. And that's a big part of the city's work to make good on the goals that we've set forward, set towards ourselves.
So with that, I'd like to invite Matt Schinderman from OSU Cascades to come up and give a brief overview of the work that's been done to date on the greenhouse gas emission inventory for the city operations. This is brand new work. We actually had OSU Cascades work on an inventory in 2007 that actually included a community-wide inventory. We met with Matt back in September September, I believe, to begin talking about how to do this specifically for city operations. And really, this was an opportunity for us to learn more about what data we currently have available, what the inventory processing entails, and how this can inform our decision-making around the types of projects we could engage in where we have key impact areas. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for having me. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Schinderman. I teach natural resources and sustainability and direct the Human and Ecosystem Resilience and Sustainability Lab at OSU Cascades. I've been working with the city and a group of students to conduct a greenhouse gas emissions inventory for the city's municipal operations. And I want to just share with you some of the preliminary findings and our conclusions as of this point. As Jillian mentioned, there were a couple of reasons to conduct the inventory, one of which was to establish a good, credible baseline for future work, the ability to track emissions growth or reductions as the city grows, but also to really provide some important information to inform the climate action process for this community. A third objective was to identify some really important data gaps in terms of what is being collected, what's not being collected, and how data are collected to inform climate action planning for both the city and the community at large, which provides an opportunity to think about areas for improvement and identify those key opportunities for leveraging significant impacts from an emissions perspective, but also from an operational cost perspective. So greenhouse gas emissions inventories are fundamentally a data collection process. The analysis piece of it is a very short time span process. You can spend a great deal of time collecting data to inform an inventory. But basically, we can think about a variety of different types of data that go into the analysis. I'm just going to give you an overview of what we collected from the city and various vendors to inform our analysis. So typically, emissions inventories are broken into three different scopes of emissions, scopes 1, 2, and 3. Scope 1 emissions relate to combustion of fuels on site, stationary sources. Things like natural gas combustion typically fall into scope 1. Fleet fuel consumption is another category of emissions that fall into scope 1. And then there's a category we call fugitive emissions, which include things like refrigerants, fertilizers, those kinds of things, which also go into scope 1. Scope 2 typically involves emissions that are generated from off-site combustion of energy resources. Purchased electricity tends to be the largest component of scope 2. And then scope 3 emissions are sometimes reported. If you look at in the private sector, it's often pretty common that scope 3 emissions are omitted from emissions inventories. But in most municipal emission inventory processes, scope 3 emissions are included. And they include things like employee commuting. For this process, we worked with the city to conduct a survey of city employees to determine the average number of trips per week, miles per trip, and vehicles used to generate an estimate for the employee base. Solid waste is another scope 3 emissions category. That is also generally an estimate in these inventories. Waste haulers typically provide information to municipalities in the form of invoices for the number of pickups, not necessarily the weight or volume of material that is taken away. So you have to create some estimates to get solid waste emissions footprint information. Wastewater is another one, both in terms of the electricity used to support the wastewater treatment system, as well as the treatment system itself and any emissions associated with treatment. And then finally, transmission losses, where we're looking at losses of electricity from the point of origin to the point of actual energy use. And those estimates are provided by the utilities themselves. So that said, that is quite a bit of data to process, believe it or not, but there are things we did not measure, and those are important things to keep in mind. It's pretty common to conduct both a municipal government operational inventory paired with a community-wide inventory. what we're going to talk about today is limited solely to the municipal government operations. We did not do a community-wide inventory as a part of this process. There are some significant issues with the reliability and credibility of community-wide emissions inventories because there's a pretty significant amount of estimation that goes into generating that information. We also did not have data on employee travel for the city, thinking about directly reimbursed travel associated with city operations or air travel. So those did not figure into this round of the analysis. We do have waste estimates for the volume of material going to the landfill, but to my knowledge, there has not been a waste stream analysis for the city, looking at the various components of the waste stream, which is important both from an emissions perspective, but also a total ecological footprint perspective. And then the last one is pretty important, and I'll talk about this more in a few minutes, but we did not collect information on contract services associated with city operations. And those would include things like road building and maintenance, building infrastructure, and infrastructure in general. So those are some caveats as to what is not included in this round of the analysis. So I'm going to go through just some graphics here. I'll walk you through what these bar charts look like, recognizing that they're a little bit small. We're going to look at the city's profile, total output, and compare that to some peer cities, and look at the similarities and some of the differences. So we utilized data from the 2014 and 15 fiscal year for the city of Bend, and the estimated population for that time period was around 77,000. Our total emissions footprint for the city, the estimate's around 21,000 metric tons of CO2 equivalent. When you look at how that breaks down into different emissions categories, electricity is 64% of that emissions portfolio. Natural gas is the second largest contributor at about 15%, and then it breaks down into smaller and smaller marginal categories of emission sources. Employee commuting is about 6%, solid waste 3%, wastewater 5%, and freight is pretty small at 1% for the data that we were utilizing. A good direct comparison peer city is City of Bellingham, approximately the same population. They utilize a similar process for going through the analysis, so we have something similar to compare our results to. If we combine all of the data across categories, their total output for the baseline year of 2000 was just under 20,000 metric tons. So we're pretty close in terms of population size and total emissions footprint with the city of Bellingham. We look at how it breaks down, combining their electricity wedges there. Their electricity sources are 64%, so the same value that we have in Bend. Natural gas for City of Bellingham accounts for 18% of their total emissions profile compared to our 15%. Employee commuting for City of Bellingham is 8% compared to 6% for City of Bend. Across the board, the relative ratio of contributions of different sources is very, very similar between the City of Bend and the City of Bellingham. Fort Collins is another interesting peer city. They're almost double the size of Bend. They did go through a really rapid population growth period over the last 20 years, so they experienced what Bend has been experiencing more recently. Their baseline year for this particular report was 2013, reported for a population of 151,000. Their total emissions were 54,000 metric tons. So we're looking at roughly double the population and roughly double the emissions. So when we look at those two peer cities, our emissions analysis is tracking very closely with what those two cities are reporting and analyzing. Eugene's a little bit different. I think we're all aware of that in many different ways. But in a reporting sense, Eugene has taken a slightly different approach to emissions and what they're including in their analysis. They're reporting on all scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions, but what they're also including in scope 3 are estimates for the infrastructure emissions as a part of city footprint, as well as some procurement items. So looking at goods and services the city purchases or utilizes as a part of its operations. It is debatable whether all of those items should actually go under the city's operational footprint, but I think that the inclusion of them here gives you a good comparison and some good thoughts for moving forward. When you incorporate infrastructure for the city of Eugene, their analysis indicates that commitments to road building, buildings, and infrastructure maintenance and development, it's a full third of their total emissions portfolio. So it's actually larger than electricity, purchased electricity, which becomes the second largest category, equal to procurement in their analysis. When you look at all those other marginal areas, they track pretty similarly with what we found in our analysis as far as the relative ratio. But that infrastructure piece is really, really important moving forward. It's something to consider. So we can look at sort of the big picture, the City of Bend's analysis, and other analyses that have been conducted around the United States. And there are some general take-home messages in terms of key opportunity areas. And the first one is purchased electricity is a substantial factor in any municipal government's emissions portfolio, which you could figure out without really doing an emissions inventory. It's pretty common sense. And generally, that translates into two action areas. The first is efficiency, reducing demand to the greatest extent feasible, and the second is investment in renewables. Natural gas is another area, opportunity area. The primary action opportunity there is in efficiency, which generally translates into improvements in building envelopes and efficiency of operating systems as well. Solid waste is another opportunity area, not so much in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, because across communities, what we tend to see is that solid waste contributes less than 5% to the total footprint for any given municipal government's inventory. It's probably a little bit different for the community-wide analysis, but for the city, it's small. It creates an opportunity or presents an opportunity in terms of the total ecological footprint, which is more encompassing than the carbon footprint. And for potential cost savings. So that's a good one to keep an eye on. Procurement's another area. As the Eugene inventory points out, procurement can have a substantial impact on a municipal inventory, but it also offers a lot of opportunities for streamlining efficiencies and potential cost savings. The big elephant in the room is that infrastructure footprint. We think it's really important for the city to get an estimate for that and include it in the discussion of the city's greenhouse gas emissions, and I'll talk about that more in a second here. So some early conclusions. If we look at peer cities and we look at reports for emissions inventories that have been published from around the United States, we are tracking very closely to what other cities are finding in terms of the total footprint based on the population size in Bend, but also in terms of the relative split, the contributions of different sources. We interpret that as suggesting that our current analysis is accurate, but not necessarily precise. So we think that there are opportunities to improve the precision of the analyses we have conducted so far, but there's a really important consideration for the city moving forward. It is possible to spend a great deal of money and a great deal of time increasing the precision of a greenhouse gas emissions inventory without actually improving the accuracy of the report or the substantive details that translate into action items moving forward. We think we're pretty close with some additional information we can collect from the city based on conversations we had last week or earlier this week. Lost track of time altogether, whenever. We've been talking since September. We think we can get a little bit more data that will get us a little bit further down the line and provide enough information to produce a credible and reliable baseline report from which to move forward. There are a couple of other take-home messages. The infrastructure piece is really important, and we think we feel pretty confident we'll be able to come up with an estimate for that for this current reporting cycle. And the other piece of it is that improvements in data collection required to support a good inventory will have other benefits, particularly in terms of identifying opportunities for cost savings and greater efficiency in operations across the board. So I think in the interest of time, I'm going to stop there. There's a lot of information to share about what other communities are doing. If folks have questions about the inventory, the data we included, how we manipulated data, and where we're going from there, I welcome people reaching out to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
So I'm pausing only because I wanted to make sure if there are any questions for Matt, we can loop back with him. Is there anything immediate that you want to ask this evening?
Well, Matt, if you just explain the infrastructure footprint a little bit better, just give me an example of some activity that the city would ordinarily do, would be classified as infrastructure, that then would be included in the model.
Absolutely. One way to think about it is just in terms of fuel expenditures. So if you think about road paving, road maintenance, road construction, that may be contracted out. Mm-hmm. There's a fuel footprint associated with that project. Collection of fuel receipts from the vendor would be a relatively straightforward way to track the greenhouse gas emissions footprint for a road project or a building. New construction or extensive remodeling. That's
that
only
extend
a piece.
As far also as the material itself. For example, if it were a petrochemical asphalt, yeah. Emulsified asphalt.
If we have good material information, we can generate some pretty reasonable estimates.
Or is that into the expense of precision, not necessarily accuracy?
Depends on the project. But generally speaking, you know, with greenhouse gas emissions inventory, there's no limit to how much you can spend, but there is a limit to how precise you can get. We're dealing with gross data, we're dealing with estimation almost across the board. There are some categories of data which are very reliable and precise, and those are usually utility-based. Everything else requires a degree of estimation. Gallons of fuel consumed is an estimate, because that does not translate directly into true emissions. One word of caution in terms of interpreting any greenhouse gas emissions inventories is that they are a gross tool rather than a precise tool.
Okay, thank you.
I would say that the real elephant in the room is how much would it cost us to get a good, accurate inventory?
I think you're almost there. I don't think there are additional costs to be incurred. We will continue the work and to process information, and there's no cost associated with continued work at this point.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your work, sir.
I'm not sure that you could get a lot of benefit out of spending a lot of money to hire another entity to take this forward to the next level of precision.
Thank you.
And Matt, maybe just an explanation about your volunteer position. You know, I understand that this is an effort that you conducted with your students as a part of your research and betterment of the human intellect, I guess is the best way to describe it. This is not something that the city contracted you to do?
No, so I am not under contract with the city. The right. City has entered into an agreement with OSU Cascades to support the program. And so that money goes into pieces that are student-driven. I do not direct.
Yeah, but I think that needs to be mentioned.
Absolutely.
And that's why I asked the question. Yeah. Part.
There was a $2,000 investment in support of OSU Cascades programs for the inventory.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we're going to move on to the section that will